Golf Podcast, presented by Golficity, where we bring you the tips, instruction, and support you need to get the most out of your golf game. And now your hosts, Frank and Mike.
All right, everybody, this is episode number 256 of the Golf Podcast, and we're going to talk about something that everybody's chatting about. It's early in the season, so it's perfect timing. We've got a special guest that's going to be coming on the show in a few minutes. We've got Chris Gaffney. He's a director of championships for the MGA, the Metropolitan Golf Association. We took a bunch of your questions from Instagram and the Facebook group. We have some questions of our own, and we're going to talk about those 2019 golf rules. I'm excited for this one, Mike.
Yeah, same, because I just don't understand most of them. Right. You go back to what you know. I mean, I did that a lot while we were in Florida. I wanted to learn the new rules, but I just kind of went back to the old rules, which is not right, but we don't know yet.
Well, you know what? We've talked about this before. We said that rules don't always have to be like punitive, if you know what I mean. Like knowing them can actually help you. And sometimes like we end up not taking advantage of the rules, especially knowing the new ones. So there's certain things that the rules have been loosened up a little bit, like grounding your club in the bunker and stuff like that, where, you know, if you don't know them, you can't take advantage of them. So my hope is that in talking about them here and learning about them, we're going to be able to take advantage of them and actually score a little bit better. So we've got a lot to run through with him in a minute. We also want to chat a little bit about our big trip. We're back from Orlando, which, man, I'm already missing that sun. It is
so cold today, man.
I don't know if I can get this on the screen here. My watch says it is 3 degrees. It is three. There's a number three right there. And anyway, I can't get it on the screen, but 3 degrees here, but it was so beautiful down there. And it was just everything worked out well. We went down there, with a crazy packed schedule, and then just the magic happened.
Say the least. You know, yeah.
Things just worked out. We ended up getting a chance to get out there and play and collaborate with a lot of really great guys, which we had these like fringe plans, but we just couldn't get them solidified because everybody's so busy. But long story short, we got a round in with Peter Finch. We played with Seb Brown of Seb on Golf. We played with the Golfholics boys. We played with Bob Menery. It was just great to get out there and play with everybody. And all of these, we've got videos, we've got vlogs, we played some night golf, we did a ton of stuff in addition to everything we had planned for hitting the PGA show, the show floor, demo day. I mean, we did it all. I came back with a hard drive just stacked.
Yeah, stocked
with video,
man.
You know, and we're going to be releasing all of that on the YouTube channel. If you're not already subscribed there, make sure you check it out. Just check out Golficity. We're also going to be posting those in the Golficity app and on Facebook. A lot of ways to see them. But I'm excited to start rolling this stuff out.
Yeah, same. And everyone's asking me, even my buddies, you know, over here saying, can't wait to see some of these course videos. Cause I was talking, you know, so big about all the courses. They were all great. But the funny part was it felt good to come back to like real food, because my biggest complaint to everyone was like, you and I, we just ran on fast food.
Yeah.
We literally, that fueled us. And coffee, you know, cause, you know, when you're going bang, 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 I think we had an itinerary to the minute, and we're not exaggerating. It was to the minute. Like we even said, like, if we have to end a round of golf, we didn't have to end a round of golf, but if we had to end one early to get to our next thing, we had to do it. So it was that type of trip. But let me tell you something. It was great to be out there. You and I, we got a couple of shot scope rounds under our belt too.
Mm-hmm. We did,
which is great. So we started now. So we're on the leaderboard now, right?
We are on the leaderboard. As well, the other thing I wanted to mention here, we talked a couple of weeks ago about our goals for 2019, right?
Uh-huh, that's right.
Well, the first goal I've got right at the top.
Did you nail it?
50% fairways hit. I pull up my ShotScope dashboard today. I'm 50% on the season right now, dude.
Do it.
How Skull great quits. Is that?
Hang it up. Hang it
How
up.
How great is that? Now, I got to maintain it. But you know why that largely comes from? We played – the last round we played Celebration Golf.
Yeah,
club.
You lit it up there.
I lit it up. 64% fairways hit at Celebration.
That's why you scored.
And you know what, so too? Well. Like, it just shows you. And that counterbalances. I had Hawks Landing was tough day.
Yeah.
Beat up at Hawks. I ended up – I think my – I was like a 30% or lower fairways in regulation at Hawks. But tight fairways and the wind. Remember the wind that day?
It was brutal.
It would have been a brutal. Smarter a play to put the driver away altogether, because anything you got up in the air just kind of drifted that day. But anyway, long story short, I mean, it was great to start to like get that feel back. And it was proof to me. I can't remember, because of how busy we always are, I can't remember the last time I played 5 rounds of golf in 4 days. Can you?
I cannot. I don't think I've ever done that in my life.
Yeah. 5 rounds in 4 days, because we had one night golf round where we played, you know, twice or whatever. Mm-hmm. And by the end of the week, by rounds 4 and 5, and my last round was Celebration, when we played Celebration Golf Club, that's my best round, I felt like I was grooving, you know? And I just, yeah. It just shows you like the importance of playing often if you want to get better. You know, all those different things, like the field, all the things we talk about here on the podcast, I felt like it was starting to come back to me because I was playing. And then it's tough to like not play for like, in this case, coming back to New York and it's cold and not playing for a week or two or whatever it may be. But I mean, man, when you can get in that groove and just play a couple times.
Are you the type of guy that if you played 36 in a day, would you be on fire in that second round? Or would you lose stamina and just go way the other way?
I guess it depends. Sometimes if I play that much, I'm dragging a little bit, to be honest. But I am the type of guy, I feel like if I can get out there and play a couple days in a row, or maybe every other day, like, or twice a week, or even anything with more frequency, it's, things are fresh in my mind. I'm working on improving things. But whatever it was, and the proof was right there that I was able to play a little bit better. But speaking of which, you know, the first round we kicked it off with Lake Nona, which was just gorgeous. That track was just impeccable, beautiful track. Mm-hmm. I wish we could have flown the drone to show you guys some of the overview of these holes.
It was a no-go.
No-go. We were right next to the airport. So that was not happening. But huge thanks to ShotScope, who hosted us that day. Yep. That was great. And, you know, I just want to give them a shout out and just say thank you for that. And ShotScope, as many of you know, they sponsor the podcast, and they brought a lot of great opportunities, a lot of great stuff that we can share with you guys. The leaderboard's one of them. If anybody out there, if you haven't checked out the ShotScope yet, the V2, what it is, it's a GPS watch that you wear on the course, but it also tracks hundreds of stats as you play. They've got 40,000 GPS mapped courses from all over the world. It's all there. It's in the watch. You get to go out, you get to play, you get to get those distances, those GPS distances. But like I said, in the background, it's tracking your stats. And that's what we're using for these leaderboards, which we're going to be doing even more of as the season progresses. We're going to be doing some giveaways with those. But it was great, Mike. I mean, how great was it to actually meet the guys behind it?
It was great.
I mean, we've been using the watch for so long, but to meet the people who go into it,
yep.
That was great stuff.
Yeah, it was excellent to get an insight on where they're going with this product. You know, I think they have a lot of great things to come. I'm excited for it. I'm excited to have the first full season of it. And in fact, you talked about Hawks Landing. I'm currently looking at my V2, my stats right here on my dashboard. I'm drooling over that. It's funny. That 101 yard. So it was 101 yard, 60 degree wedge I hit into 4 feet. It was 4 feet, according to Pin Collect, for birdie on that 13th hole. So how cool is that? I can look back, because I didn't know how long that shot really was, and I didn't know how close I stuck it. But now I'm just like, wow, it was 101 yard, 60 degree wedge, stuck to 4 feet, made birdie. But that's, I mean, it's cool. And I have that on the leaderboard now, so that's cool. So anyway, go grab the V2, visit shotscope.com/golficity, or you could just use the coupon code Golficity at checkout. So go check them out.
Yeah. And I will post in the show notes the code to join our leaderboard. It's free to join. The leaderboard is growing rapidly, Mike. So I'm excited for that. And the other thing too is, again, meeting the guys, they're very cool. They're very receptive to ideas. And we started to chat with them about even possibly doing the virtual open, maybe not this year, maybe the year after, doing that with ShotScope integration, which would be really great, because then we'd have even more that we could do as far as leaderboards and competitions, because the virtual open's always fun every year. So stay tuned for that. Check it out. We'll talk about it a little bit more. Now, Mike, I want to talk about these rules a bit. Right. Cause we're going to bring Chris on the show in a moment. And why don't you want to give a little bit of background on Chris?
Yeah, actually, Chris, I met you, if you guys remember way back, I can't even tell you what episode it was. It's probably the double digits. That's how far back, but we had a podcast episode with a friend of mine nearby, Greg Angelillo. I think the name of the podcast, Frank, was Around with a Scratch Golfer. And ever since, Greg has been a big fan of Golficity. So if he's listening, Greg, what's up? He hooked us up with Chris, who he's good friends with. he said, guys, you got to bring Chris on the show. He's a wealth of knowledge. He can come on and talk about all these new rules. I think it would really be a great conversation. So thank you again, Greg, for that. I'm excited to have Chris because, you know, I checked his bio. I've seen where he's been. He's done a lot for the game, and he probably knows a heck of a lot about these rules, man.
Right.
You know, he's going to be a good guy to learn them from.
Yeah, and I can't wait to pick his brain a little bit because you and I, you saw in the if anybody was watching along, when we did that round at Wild Turkey, we started to experiment with using leaving the pin in. I think that's the rule change that's been getting the most attention across the board, which is fine, but there's still a lot of other stuff in there too. Now, it was an interesting mix because when we were down in Florida, we played with a lot of different people.
Right.
And it was an interesting mix of the vibe and the feel people were having for that pin in versus pin out. I did find that a lot of people were leaving it in just because it moved, you know, the pace of play along a little bit. But I've got questions, yeah. You know, there's some stuff that I think are great changes. I like some of these ideas of having things like a double hit only counting as one stroke because it's unintentional.
Mm-hmm.
Again, you know, we'll joke and we'll talk to them about this a little bit, but obviously you see a lot of people doing those trick shots where they're knocking the ball up in the air and then hitting it. It's like, that doesn't count. Well, that's intentional. So obviously that does count,
but right.
There's other stuff like this. I like the idea that they're removing a lot of the penalties for unintentional things, unintentionally moving the ball on the green, things like that, because that could get frustrating. I didn't even like watching it on the PGA Tour when something happens, guy mistakenly steps too close to his ball and it moves a little bit. Now all of a sudden he's like out of contention, you know?
Right.
I think that that's something that makes the game unfriendly. We want to make it more friendly. So there's a lot of stuff in there that I think they think will be good. There's some stuff that's a little bit more confusing. We saw that thing this week, and I don't even know all the specifics, but with the caddy and the alignment. Did you see that story?
Yeah. Real interesting. Who was that player? Hao Tong Li.
There you go. He lost out on like $100,000 because of this. So tough. So that's what I want to get the take on a little bit too. Obviously something like that might not, we're not playing with caddies as regularly as the PGA Tour, but again, it benefits everybody to know the rules without a doubt. So what do you say we do a quick word from our sponsor and then we'll bring Chris on the show and we'll just start diving into it. I want to find out what was the reasoning for these rule changes and what some of the highlights are. What do you think about that?
Yeah, absolutely, Frank. So this episode is sponsored by Titleist. Last week was the official launch of the new Pro V1 and Pro V1X golf ball.
And we were there.
We were there. We witnessed it on the day that it launched. We were in the Titleist booth. And in case you missed that video, it is live on our YouTube channel. We actually interviewed one of the members of Titleist R&D team. We found out what the new design is all about. I mean, the new Pro V1 and Pro V1X, they were redesigned for more speed, more precision, and more consistency than ever before. And they're available now everywhere you could shop for golf balls. So check it out.
Yeah, and it was really great. We were, like I said, we were talking with Mike from Titleist. He explained in detail what they changed, what the R&D team had done. And he talked about even the cover going 17% thinner.
How crazy is that?
It's crazy because it shows you how much they've had to go into it. And remember when we did the ball plant tour, we got the opportunity to see what they do. And not only is it the ball that has to change, the entire manufacturing process has to change because they manufacture the tools that make the ball. So, you know, you look at it and you see that these guys are constantly striving to improve. And to me, that's exactly what I'm looking for in any type of company that I work with, somebody who cares enough to constantly be improving. And when you compare the two, remember the Pro V1 has that softer feel and that lower ball flight as opposed to the Pro V1X. The Pro V1X, a little bit higher ball flight, a little bit more spin, a firmer feel. It really comes down to a personal preference. I've told everybody, people message me all the time, which ball should I hit? I say the best investment you're going to make, buy a sleeve of each, go out and play them, see which one works for you. That's the way to do it. They both have that proven, that drop and stop greenside control. They've got that very great durability. I think I played with like one ball for half the time we were in Florida. It's incredibly durable. And for you yellow ball players, your time has come. The Pro V1 and the Pro V1X are going to be available in yellow beginning this March. And I actually heard about a lot of pros, not on the tour, but a lot of teaching pros and local pros who are making the switch just because they could see it a little bit better. There's some merits to that too.
I might be a yellow ball guy this year, I think.
There you go. If you're a yellow guy, then
you got the bomber shaft. I'm going to put that in the TS, and then absolutely.
There you go. Hey, and one last thing I wanted to mention.
Yeah.
These hats, dude.
How nice are
these? I got the green out on in honor of the Waste Management, which is this week. Titleist sent these to us. How slick is this? Look at this. The black. They're
so, I love the black with black the green.
With the green. They got the white. So I'll post a link to that in the show notes because those hats are awesome. I'm loving this green. I'm going to be rocking this a little bit this season. So thank you, Titleist, for that. Also, big thank you to Peter Millar. Peter Millar is setting the standard in menswear. Their products are a total game changer for me. And that's simply because they're made from the finest quality materials, unparalleled construction, you know, attention to detail. And it's really incredibly comfortable. Mike, I wore the Peter Millar pullover. And I went straight from like the airport, the plane wearing it right out to the golf course. It's just one of those like really super versatile. It's that Perth pullover. You guys hear us talk about it a lot. I love that versatility. I can wear one thing for multiple occasions.
Yeah. I mean, it was cold in Florida a little bit, right?
The first day we got there was 48 degrees.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's why I love these things. I mean, you could peel them right off. I remember we had some early rounds and then the sun came up, you know, so that's why these are so great. I know Peter Millar partners with the most skilled craftsmen and artisans in the world. They're never overlooking any detail, no matter how small. The quality of the buttons, I mean, the zippers, stitching, I mean, you name it. I'm loving their modern look. I mean, that's the new look now. So even wear their belts on the course, I even wear it in the office. I love their belts. They're great. Head over to petermillar.com/golf. Experience the quality for yourself. See some of our favorites. Be sure to use the link. You'll receive complimentary shipping and a free hat. So it's petermillar.com/golf, petermillar.com/golf.
All right. What do you say we get Chris on the show?
Yeah, let's go bring him on.
All right, let's bring him in. All right, guys, this is going to be an exciting one. We've got Chris Gaffney, Director of Championships for the MGA on the line. Chris, welcome to the show.
How's it going, guys?
It's going great. Hey, let's get a little bit of background. Tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do for the MGA.
So I run the championship program over at the Metropolitan Golf Association. We're really based in the best area of golf in the entire country, Metropolitan New York. So we cover Long Island, Northern New Jersey, Westchester, Fairfield County. So we're in a nice little circle around New York City, Manhattan, and run championships, administer USGA qualifiers, and then also administer the rules of golf in the area as well.
Wow. So that's a lot of golfers that fall under that umbrella. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. We have a lot of golfers and a lot of great golf courses. I think just absolutely spectacular member clubs in the area.
That's great. Well, we appreciate your time coming on the show because I think that the 2019 rule changes have been what's been on everybody's top of mind, especially now, you know, kicking in really early in the year. And I think you see on social media, you see a lot of questions, a lot of people wanting to make sure they understand them. So it's great to have you on and get a chance to pick your brain a little bit.
Yeah, for sure. We've been spending a lot of time on the new rules in the winter.
Oh, I bet. So let's talk about that first. Let's talk about a little bit of background. What was really the incentive, as far as you know, for the USGA to make so many changes? I mean, it feels like a lot in one year. Is this something that they do regularly, or do you remember the last time they did this many significant changes?
So it really fell before my time that they did a major overhaul of the rules. It was 1984, so even before I was born. But every 4 years, they had done a kind of rewrite to the rules since then. And I think it was 2012, they decided that the rules had just become too cumbersome, too complicated. And they've been on a long path to get it to this 2019 point. So they've been spending the last, really, I think, 7 years working on the new rules. And they got to a point, and I think everybody in the golf world did, that they were a little too complicated and tough to understand. Mm-hmm. And even as administrators, we were dealing with what they called the decisions book that had case law based on the rules of golf, that we needed this case law book to figure out a lot of rule situations that came up. And they wanted to make it simpler, make it easier to understand. And that's been the release of the rules this year. And I think overall, they really have hit a home run. I think we're going to see a lot of interesting situations play out this year with the new rules. But I think overall, as everybody gets used to them, it's going to be a good experience this year.
Yeah, and there's some in particular that I like in there. It just feels a little bit less, you know, punitive in a way. You know, not as many penalties for like unintentional stuff, double hits or unintentionally moving the ball. Because I think there was, maybe you agree with me, there's a growing sentiment of frustration, even watching it on the PGA Tour and on the LPGA Tour, where we saw some people just kind of get penalized, and it just seemed silly taking people out of contention for stuff that was unintentional.
Yeah. And I think there were some penalties that were a lot harsher than they wanted them to be. And then we started having video evidence penalize players and
right.
just things I don't think anybody was happy about. And even on the tour, they deal with a very perfect set of rules where all the golf courses are perfectly marked and conditions are perfect. And most of us aren't playing in that every week. So a lot of the rules started to adapt to what we're all dealing with on a day-by-day basis mm-hmm. and not just dealing with that kind of perfect bubble of tournament golf where you have experts going out and marking the course and getting everything ready for a tournament. Rules are more friendly to the I'm going and playing public course this weekend. Things are going to be a little beat up, a little different than what they see on the tour.
Gotcha. And I think pace of play had to come into this a little bit too, right?
Yeah, there's a lot they've been doing for pace of play, and there's a lot of things they put into words that had just been kind of suggestions beforehand or kind of unsaid with suggestions on how fast people should play or just putting in more pace of play recommendations and then things like keeping the flag stick in to try to keep and the flag stick's another great example of something that on the pro tour that might not speed up play. But I know when I'm playing on the weekend and I'm hitting a 30-foot putt with no caddy, I'm cool putting with a flag stick in there.
Yeah,
and right.
You hit that 30-footer and you hit the flag stick, you're dealing with a penalty when the only reason you didn't take it out is because you didn't feel like walking up 30 feet to pull the flag. So I think a lot of the rule changes are focused on our everyday golfers, which is really nice to see.
I think so too. And Mike and I were just chatting about, we were just playing the first couple rounds and I'm noticing more and more, you know, that people are starting to leave it in just because it is moving things along a little bit. You know, obviously jury's still out on whether it hurts or helps. I think a lot of people think it helps, but that's its own thing. But as far as pace of play goes, it does seem to be helping, at least in practice.
Yeah, and I think guys like Bryson and as they do some more research, we're going to find out that maybe it helps a little, maybe it hurts a little. But I think overall, it's just going to speed up play on the everyday level. And I think at a certain point, we'll figure out what's the best thing to do for us putting, mm-hmm. if we should keep it in or move it out. But right now, I think it'll just be a topic to discuss. But overall, it's going to help a lot on the weekend rounds.
Yeah. Now, the first question I had for you, is this something that these changes are a joint effort with the USGA and the RNA? So are we going to see, essentially, are we going to see the same rules being played both here and across the pond when we're watching like the Open Championship?
Yeah, so that's one of the big ones is that I think overall 99% of our rules in the past were the same as what the RNA was dealing with. And the USGA and RNA always wrote the rules together. But I mean, one big thing that in the past is the RNA only gave embedded ball relief when you were in the fairway or a closely mown area, where over here we had a local rule for embedded ball relief anywhere, what used to be through the green, which is anywhere in the course that's not a bunker or a penalty area. Now both sides, RNA, USGA, are saying we're giving that embedded ball relief in the general area throughout the course, which little things like that are starting to clean it up. But yes, this is a joint initiative for both of them. Mm-hmm. And I think overall the landscape's becoming a lot cleaner for everybody in that sense. And we've always dealt with a lot of local rules, which the embedded ball used to be a local rule. Now the embedded ball rule is a rule of golf and we don't need a local rule to say you get embedded ball relief when you're in the rough. It's now a rule of golf.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Okay.
Chris, I wanted to jump for the everyday, you know, golfer, the 20 handicap, 18 handicap. I mean, other than the flag stick in, can you rattle off maybe the three most significant for that type of golfer just to know this season? Maybe it's something that can help their game that they were unaware of is a rule change, like Frank mentioned earlier.
Yeah, so I think the nice thing is that if you go out there and play on the weekend and don't know anything about the new rules, you're mm-hmm. really not going to have any missteps. You actually might avoid a couple penalties you would have gotten in the past.
But okay.
The big thing for people to be aware of, and we've seen it on TV, it looks a little weird at first, but it's dropping and then the relief areas. So the first one is anytime we're taking relief now or operating under a penalty stroke to get out of an area, we're dropping from knee height instead of shoulder height. Mm-hmm. Everybody's heard a lot of feedback. It looks awkward, feels awkward. But at the end of the day, we're just going from shoulder height to knee height. It's really not a big deal. And the end outcome of it is that now when we drop the ball, there's a better chance it comes to rest in the area we're dropping it in. So the first one to remind people is that we're now dropping from knee height. And the nice thing in the rules is that if we get up there and drop from shoulder height and we don't play the ball yet, the rules do let us pick it up and drop from knee height to correct that error. So I think that's a good one for people to remember is we're dropping from knee height, but if you make the mistake of dropping from shoulder height, you're not in trouble until you actually make a stroke at that ball. So that's one that we've been trying to get across to people is remember knee height and you have a chance to correct that drop up until you play it.
Interesting.
And then a part of the dropping one also is that now anytime we're either taking relief or dropping because we lost our ball or hit it out of bounds, we're getting out of water from a penalty area, we're always dealing with what they call now a relief area. So let's say we get up from the fairway, hit it out of bounds. We used to drop it as near as possible from where we just played. Now we're going to say where we last played from within one club length, no closer to the hole. So it's just got to come to rest in this what looks like a pie of a relief area because it's a club length in a semicircle, no closer to the hole from where we last played that shot. So every time we're dropping now, we're dealing with this specific relief area that's determined from a reference point. And honestly, I'd say one of the great things the USGA has done is they have all these infographics and pictures on their website that saying the words, it sounds a little complicated. When you see the pictures and infographs they have, it helps a lot more to just visualize what you're dealing with there.
That makes sense. It's good. It's good that they provide that visual too. We'll link to that in the show notes so everybody can take a look. Let's talk a little bit about too this. The other one I think I've been seeing a lot of questions about is this new idea where grounding the club in the hazard is not a penalty. So let's talk about that. Primarily, I think the big thing would be in sand traps and bunkers. We're used to not grounding the club. Now, is this something, how is that in actual practice? Is this something that it's only when it's unintentional? Can someone take an actual practice swing in the bunker? Like what, and make contact with the sand? What's the ruling or what's the inner workings there?
Really good questions there. And I think one way they've really cleaned up the rules is that in the past, they used the term hazard that dealt with bunker and water. Mm-hmm. Now a bunker is separate from a penalty area. And a penalty area is any old water hazard is now a penalty area. But we could also say an area of fescue is a penalty area also. All this penalty area does now, which is going to look like a hazard to everybody, it's going to have a red line or a yellow line around it. Mm-hmm. But the thing they did that really cleaned it up is all that line means now is that we can take relief from that area if we need to. Not take relief, sorry. Take a penalty stroke to get out of that area if we need to. So we hit it. Let's say we hit it just on the edge of the water. Our ball goes in the water. We know we're going to take a penalty stroke, get out of that red penalty area, and drop under a penalty stroke. But let's say our ball's sitting on the edge next to the water and we can play it. In the past, we used to not be able to ground our club in the penalty area. We couldn't move a loose impediment, which would be like a twig or a leaf or something like that. Mm-hmm. Now the rules are letting us do anything in the penalty area that we did in the general area, fairway rough. So they've eliminated all these restrictions and potential penalties that could pop up in the penalty area. And all that red line or yellow line is telling us now is we have the option to take a penalty stroke and get out of there. So I, from a rules official standpoint, this is one of my favorite changes because it makes if I find my ball in the hazard, I'm not suddenly worried of, oh, can I ground my club or do this? It's not a hazard anymore. It's a penalty area and there's no restrictions on me grounding my club or doing anything like that. Mm. So penalty area is very clean. The bunker is still an area where you can get into some trouble, but they've cleaned up kind of the goofy penalties of getting in trouble for doing something you didn't mean to. But in the bunker, you still can't ground your club immediately behind or in front of the ball. Okay. So they're still keeping that same restriction. And the main reason is because if you ground your ball behind a ball in the bunker, you're probably going to improve your lie instantly.
Right, right.
If you get a little of that sand gone. So while we can't ground it behind or in front of, there's no worry now if I happen to lean on my club in the sand or touch the sand, as long as I'm not testing the conditions. So you had asked about practice swings in a bunker. We can't, if we're in a bunker, we can't take practice swings in that bunker and hit the sand while our ball's in there. But they're going to let us lean on our club or touch the sand as long as we're not trying to test the conditions. Gotcha. I think the best change in the bunker, because I've seen a lot of awful – this happen a lot of times, and it's pretty awful, is I hit my ball in the bunker and I get up there, and there's a huge branch next to my ball. There's a divot next to it. And in the past, we couldn't take loose impediments out of a bunker. Now the rules are going to let us take those loose impediments out. So that cleans up a lot of the kind of bad luck situations where you get in there and there's a pine cone on your ball, a twig, or something that falls under that loose impediment definition.
Chris, one of the listeners wrote in, how do you feel about the new caddy rule for putting? I mean, obviously we just saw, you know, Haotong Li, he lost, what was it, $132,000 just from this mistake. I mean, why did this happen? Why did this rule come up? What was it meant to do, and what is it all about?
Yeah, and you know, this one I think is another one we'll hear a lot of feedback on, but the one thing that I would stress as we talk about it is that I think everybody's looking at it the wrong way, because to deal with the situation is that he clearly didn't gain an advantage. He wasn't getting lined up. This isn't an interpretation by the rules official that he cheated or tried to do something malicious or had some intent to break a rule. The governing bodies wanted to kind of change the way people are approaching the game. And one of the things that they talked about is alignment, having the caddy align the players. But the way they wrote the rule is they want to get rid of the caddy being behind the player when the player steps into the box. Hmm. So when the player steps up to take the stroke, the language uses when the player begins to take his stance for the stroke is what the language is.
Mm-hmm.
If the caddy is deliberately behind him, and by deliberate, they mean you're just purposely standing there, not that you're doing anything, because even the rule says if you're deliberately there for any reason. So they're trying to get rid of that. I'm stepping up to take a stance and the caddy's right behind me. So I think the penalty is really unfortunate, but the governing bodies, the way they wrote it, they were hoping that they would just eliminate the caddy ever being behind the player when he takes the stance. So I think it's something they'll continue to think about, but I think over-educating caddies and players will help with this situation.
Yeah.
Because they just want to get rid of that. Player is stepping up to take the stroke and the caddy's right behind him. And I think that Lee situation, everybody agrees, it's an awful result. Mm. But the way the rule is written, they wrote it very simply to take out interpretation. And this situation ended up being pretty tough result. But I will say, I think it puts more onus on people to focus on the rules. Because in that situation, when he's on the putting green, if he had stepped away, any potential penalty is gone. He has an opportunity to erase what just happened. But the second he makes that stroke after stepping in when the caddy was behind him, he gets penalized.
So I guess you might have just answered my question then. So some players like to address the putt and then back off it if they're unsure. Yep. So you're saying at that point that clears everything. The caddy can come back behind and read the putt.
Exactly. So two things we've kind of talked about internally, I think will be one of two ways pros go for a best practice, is that you step up to that ball and have the caddy there, whatever you need to talk about, and then you always step away beforehand and make sure your caddy's not behind you. The other thing is, I think what we're kind of communicating to our caddies is when you get that last look at the putt, go to the other side of the hole so that you can reaffirm the read, confirm with your golfer you're good. But as long as you're not behind them, you're not going to get in that position where you could potentially get into that bad timing situation where you would get a penalty.
Right.
Gotcha. So for the layman who's out there playing with the caddy, the caddy can still help him out with a read, give him a read, stand behind it, as long as he's not there when he steps up into the box, as you say, to make his stroke.
Yeah, and that's kind of just the terminology we use, but it's when he's beginning to take his stance for the stroke. Mm-hmm. But yes, that's kind of my thought as somebody who used to caddy, is just get your last read on the other side of the hole, and whether you're taking out the flag, tending it, whatever you're doing, just do it from that side to just avoid any chance of that happening. But yeah. I just think it's one of those, they're kind of trying to change the way people approach the game from how that caddy lines up the player, and they want to get that caddy out from being right behind the player when they're taking their stance for the show.
Yeah, and as you said, it's an unfortunate thing what happened, but I think with anything, there's going to be some growing pains.
Absolutely, and the thing I'd say, we've seen a lot of, even in the NFL, we've seen a ton of rules controversies lately, this isn't a controversy. They made the right call. I think it's one of those, if philosophically the tours disagree with it, it's something to bring up from a rule standpoint to look at the rule again. But they made the right rule, and people knew what the rule was coming into the season. They've been very transparent what it was, and we on a lower level of dealing with very good amateurs who don't have professional caddies, this is a concern for us coming into the season, because a caddy might go out there for us who doesn't know the rules as well, where on the tour, most guys have a good knowledge of what's going on there. So I think this one will be a little growing pains, but yeah. I think it's similar to the knee-high drop, where it's just changing the way you've played the game previously,
right?
And tough to get used to.
Well, if nothing else, that incident will certainly bring it to a lot of people's awareness and hopefully avoid a lot of other penalties in the future. The other one that I had, and again, talking about lining up, the question that's just been kind of hammering us since we had posted, and I think everybody was talking about it. We had posted an article not too long ago about, where John Smoltz with that stand up putter. Have you seen that thing?
Yeah. I was honestly, we were looking at it today. I think it's the Bloodline putter.
Yeah. So the putter will actually stand there and you can take a walk behind it and it'll actually whatever. So the question becomes, does that, now I know when that putter was released, it was fine. It was within the rules and the manufacturer says that right on their website. But now, one of the rules is saying that you can't position a club for alignment. So I think that it was like split down the middle. People were kind of debating, is this allowed or not? So what's your take there?
I don't have a strong opinion. I think it falls more into the equipment side of things, because I think it's kind of tough that if they meet all the standards and specs that the equipment regulations have, it's hard to say that you can't have a well-balanced putter that ends up kind of sitting by itself when you leave it there. So I honestly don't have a strong opinion from the rule standpoint. I think it's a tough one to address, because I don't know how you really write in a rule that says if you have a putter that balances itself, you can't step behind it to look at how it's lined up.
Yeah.
I think it's a really tough thing to police, but it does bring up a really tough question of if we're worried about alignment, that putter is kind of giving you a way to be your own caddy behind yourself,
right,
and line yourself up at the same time.
Well, then what is that? What is the intention of that rule then? The rule that says you can't position a club for alignment. What are they trying to avoid otherwise with that then?
I think it's similar. Is that lining yourself up as a part of the challenge of the game? Mm-hmm. So using something artificial to help line yourself up is something that they want to avoid, that I'm taking something physically and putting it on the ground.
Oh, so like if I were to take one of my clubs and lay it down, like it's an align, almost like an alignment stick.
That's why I think the putter is so hard, because it's the club you're using. You have it sitting how you're getting ready to use it. You're doing nothing abnormal. Mm-hmm. They just built the putter so it balances perfectly. So
right,
honestly,
right.
I don't have a great answer for that one. I think it falls into a pretty tough gray zone for them to try to police.
Gotcha. Okay. Let me dive into, I have just one or two questions I want to make sure I get to from some of our listeners that came in on Facebook and on Instagram. So I want to see what your take is on these. In our Facebook group, Anthony Joseph asked, how extensive is the new unplayable bunker rule where the ball can be brought out of the bunker? What constitutes unplayable in that instance?
Honestly, this is one of my favorite questions, because it comes up a lot when we're dealing with an unplayable ball anywhere. Mm-hmm. Unplayable is a golf definition, not a dictionary definition. So I could say my ball sitting in the middle of the fairway is unplayable and take unplayable relief. It's the player has the sole discretion of whether his ball is unplayable or not. Not that somebody's going to do it when it's in the fairway, but the point is that you decide whether your ball is unplayable or not. So if I'm awful out of a bunker and I have to hit it up over a 20-foot lip, and I know no matter what, if I take three shots, I'm never getting out of there, I can now line my ball up with where the flag is, take a 2-stroke penalty. So this is a pretty big penalty, but I'm able to get out of the bunker and I can go back as far as I want. So a lot of courses in our area where you deal with some of these banks bunkers, like Forest Gate in New Jersey is a great example, where they have these monster greenside bunkers. Mm-hmm. You could take your 2-stroke penalty and line your ball up with the flag and go back as far as you want, and then drop the ball and then play from there. So I think it's something that a lot of us golfers who shoot higher scores, who might get beat up in one of those tough bunkers, is going to use it. But back to the unplayable question, it's at the discretion of the player. So you could decide at any point my ball's unplayable. There is no definition of whether or not the ball is unplayable.
That makes sense. And that's one of those instances where we, like, a lot of times you think rules is like, these like are punitive, but there's an instance where knowing the rules can dramatically benefit you. Cause I've been in those situations before, you know, where you're dramatically plugged right up against the wall, the bunker, and you realize, you're lucky if you can hit this out backwards or sideways and get it out. In those cases, you know, I'd rather take two strokes and be in a good spot than maybe three strokes to get it to God knows where.
Exactly. And even on the regular unplayable ball rule, where I take one penalty stroke and I can go two club lengths, no closer to the hole, or do that same flag line where I line up the flag and where my ball is and go straight back. Or the other option for unplayable is playing from where you last played your stroke, the previous stroke. So we have this come up. We usually bring up the topic at rule seminars, where at courses where they have really, really tough greens that are stimping at like a 13. Mm-hmm. Let's say you get up with a little 8-foot putt and you blast it, hit it off the green, and have a 30-yard shot back from the fairway. You can say, I'm taking an unplayable, and you take a one-stroke penalty and play it from where you last played your last stroke, which was 8 feet away from the hole.
That's interesting.
So this is one no pro would ever use this in a million years, because they're much better than that. But it's something some of us rules people have had to use before, where that 30-yard delicate pitch, I'm never hitting it to 8 feet. I'll take my one-stroke penalty, unplayable, and try to hit that putt again. And it's one of those topics. It was brought up with Phil last year when he hit that ball after hitting a really bad putt. He could have let that ball come to rest, taken an unplayable, and took another crack at that putt again for one penalty stroke. So it's one of those little rule things that a lot of times people look at the rules like it's going to hurt you. There's a lot in there that's there to help, and especially to help us players who aren't going out there and shooting even par and we're grinding to break 90.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Good to know. This other one, this question, I think this one's kind of tongue in cheek. Everybody's kind of just joking about this, but obviously the new double hit rule, we see all the trick shots that are happening out there. It's only when it's unintentional, correct?
Exactly. Yeah. And you get into we won't go into the penalty structure to make it complicated, but when you purposely hit the second ball, you're getting into that Phil situation where you're playing a moving ball on purpose.
Yeah.
And then you're getting way more than just hitting one extra stroke. So it's an accidental double hit. And I don't think most of us need to worry about the intentional one. But yeah, it's a good question, and it's come up a lot lately.
And it's been some impressive stuff that I've seen people pull off.
Oh, yeah.
I've seen people hitting out from behind trees.
Around the trees, yeah.
Yeah.
That's if nothing else, they score some, I don't know, some style points there.
Oh, yeah.
The last question I have here, I think you've already, and I know you've already answered this, but let's put it back out there again because it seems to come up a lot. Andrew C. asks, loose impediments around the ball in the bunker. This is a little bit of a different of a take on that. Now, you had mentioned how you could move loose impediments, but what he's asking is, if you move a loose impediment in the bunker and the ball moves, it causes the ball to move, that's still a stroke, correct?
Yep. So the rules, again, loose impediments are natural objects like twigs, leaves, and stuff. So the rules are going to let us move it, but if our ball moves, we're going to be responsible for that. Mm-hmm. And you know, it makes sense logically. Those things should be out there, but if we move them and our ball moves, we get a penalty stroke and we're going to have to replace that ball. So that's how it would work there. The difference is, let's say it's a Coke can or a scorecard, something artificial, man-made, that'd be a movable obstruction. Moving something like that and our ball moves, we're not penalized and we replace. And it's because the rules are very logical. That Coke can shouldn't be on the golf course. That twig, leaf, that should be on the golf course. It's a natural object.
Got it. Okay. I guess then the last question I would have, and I think you've already kind of pointed us in the right direction with the graphics on the USGA website, but if someone does have more questions and really wants to dive into fully understanding the rules before they get out there this season, is that the best course of action, or is there any other resources that you know that we could direct them to?
Yeah, absolutely. So any of your listeners who are in the Met area, we have some great resources on our website, mgagolf.org. And a lot of it will go to RNA, USGA, and we also do a handful of rule seminars throughout the offseason, kind of leading up to the season. So we have a lot of opportunities there, but the USGA and the RNA both have tremendous resources on the rules. If you go spend an hour on any of our websites, you're going to learn a lot. And I would just encourage anybody to go spend 20 minutes looking at some of those top 20 lists that are on the USGA and RNA website. Watch out for some of those third-party lists that we've seen come across that might not be totally correct. So right. Always try to go directly to the source. But yeah, either one of their websites or our website, mgagolf.org, you'll be able to find a ton of resources.
And will they be able to find, if someone does want to attend one of your seminars, all that information is on the website as well?
Yeah, and that's the one thing USGA has done a spectacular job of, is all these rules of golf explained videos. So if you go watch 10 of these minute 30 videos, you'll have a very solid knowledge of what you need to know before you go play. You're not going to be a rules official, but you'll be able to get around the course and you'll have a great idea of what the new rules are.
That's a great point, because like you said earlier, sometimes, I mean, we could talk about it or describe it, but seeing it is where it really locks it in.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Videos do it for me, and I think it's the best way to go about it.
No doubt. All right. Well, Chris, again, we appreciate your time. Thank you for clarifying some of these rules for us. And it's important, and I wish you a terrific season this year with a lot on your plate with these new rule changes, but I hope you get out there and have a great season.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it, and we're pretty excited to get out there and see how all these start going on our level this season.
All right. Terrific. Well, thank you again for your time. And it was really a pleasure having you on the show.
Yeah. Thanks a lot, guys.
All right. Thanks, Chris.
All right, Mike, that was a great one. I think talking to Chris, it was a fun experience in a lot of ways, because sometimes it can get like, talk about rules, it can get like a little bit like dry and boring, but you can just kind of feel it in like Chris's enthusiasm. Like he gets it. He gets how this is going to help golfers. And I think that was great. So there's that clarification in those certain areas. I think it's going to help. I think it's going to help people where they, like he said, those certain instances where you can use the rules to your advantage, take a penalty, maybe possibly give yourself a better chance than trying to hack it out of a bunker or whatever it may be. So I think that's where knowing it is going to help you. It's also going to help when you're out there, just knowing them and kind of helping and guiding each other, because we're all out there trying to help each other. So the more people I think who know the rules, the new changes, the better, because we can all kind of give each other guidance when we're out there. I know people are going to be asking me for new rulings when we're out there. I know I'm going to be asking people. So it's, right, sure. We just kind of help each other out, you know?
Yeah. You know, it's funny. And that one rule about the 2-stroke penalty, you know, with an unplayable eye. I'll tell you right now, I'm never taking a 2-stroke penalty. I mean, think about it. If you have a fried egg in a bunker, I'm taking one hack to loosen it.
This guy's ride or die.
And the next one is just bringing it out. You know, I want to hit out of that bunker hitting 3, not take it out and hit 4. So no, but I think it was a great conversation. I learned a lot. I mean, he blew my mind on a couple of them. There were some I didn't even hear of until he said it.
Yeah.
And it's funny at the end how you wished him luck with his hands being full this season, because, you know, accountants aren't the only ones with new rules this year, you know.
That's right.
So, you know, golf rule officials as well have a rough year ahead of them here. So,
and all, you know, eyes are on them right now.
Absolutely.
All eyes are on them. And there's going to be obviously more questions than there have been in a while, because people have to adapt to the new rules.
Yep.
But that's why I like that the rules in a lot of ways are simplified. And I think it's a good step in the right direction. I think we're going to have to see more clarification on things like that putter that kind of stands up on its own. Does that count as alignment or not? I'm sure there'll be more and more debate on that. But hey, I think it's great stuff. So if anybody has any follow-up questions, I appreciate everybody who submitted their questions, both in the Facebook group as well as on Instagram. But if anybody has any follow-up questions, you know, let us know. You can always post those still. You can post them in the Facebook group. You can send us a message. And Chris is a great guy. You know, we're still in touch with him, and we could always shoot him a message and get an answer for you guys. So, let us know what they are. And I think we'll all, like I said, growing pains, we'll all kind of learn as we go, right?
Yeah, that's it.
Look, we're already seeing the effects of it. Like I said, leaving the pin in and different things like that. So
right.
Let's let the season play out. Let's see how it goes. And maybe we'll readdress it and dive into it a little bit more. But anyway, thank you everybody for listening. Big thanks to Chris Gaffney for coming on the show and chatting with us today. as I said, stay tuned, guys. We've got so much great stuff coming for you. We've got some really great podcast interviews coming up. We've got plenty more topics to talk about. We're going to talk about our progression, things that we're working on. And we're going to talk about some equipment stuff. And we've got a lot of great videos coming too. We had that recent one, like we talked about, just at the top of the show with the new Pro V1 and Pro V1X, where we got to dive into the differences. We've got a lot of course vlogs that are going to be coming up. Plenty of stuff for you guys, and it's going to be a fun ride. So stay tuned for that. You can get to the show notes for this episode by going to golficity.com/episode256. You can also get that in the app. We've got the free Golficity app, which is available for iOS and Android. Just go to golficity.com/app or search Golficity in either app store. You'll find us. It is 100% free. And every podcast episode, every video, everything is right there, along with those show notes, the links to everything we've talked about. So check all of that out, and we'll see everybody again next week.